Hey there, and welcome to the Smart and Simple Matters show with your host, Joel Zeslofsky. Are you ready to have a sentiment fest with me and understand the true meaning of the phrase working order? Because a garden shed full of organizing tips, tactics, and tools are coming at ya. This is episode number 32. What up, everybody? It's your buddy Joel, back for another international edition of the show. I have a lovely British woman who knows a ton about organizing and productivity that will join us in a moment. But first, a shout out to another lovely woman that recently left the show a review on iTunes. Her name is Paige, and her review read like this. As a new mother and nursing student, I have unsubscribed from cable and now listen to podcasts while doing house chores. Joel's podcast is worth my time and his content is authentic and inspiring. Go Joel! She wrote G-O-O Joel! Exclamation point. I interpret that as go Joel. Wow, Paige, I wish you could see my rosy cheeks right now as I smile while reading your kind words. Thank you so much for writing them. And if you would like a shout out in a future episode, head to valueofsimple.com/iTunes and jot down a few thoughts about what's groovy about this show according to you. All right, here is what is shaking with me lately. You know, actually, I haven't been trying to do a ton since my second son, Clark, was born about 2.5 weeks ago. And I gotta say, it's hard to have specific expectations or goals when a tiny little dude like my man, Clark, is ready to shatter your eardrums or steal your attention with the cutest, most cuddly look, I tell you, that demands that you instantly stop what you're doing to take some pictures and then snuggle with him. So besides plopping Clark into a ergo baby carrier to go on walks in what has been a phenomenal past few weeks of fall, I've been mostly sticking around the house, watching my Wisconsin Badgers and Minnesota Vikings lose football games, often in ways that feel like you just got socked in the gut. Do you see that Wisconsin lost to Arizona State a couple weeks ago? Goodness gracious. Pow. Right in the kisser. Sigh. But when I have been getting out of the house, it's usually to do something for the family, like take my older son, Grant, to Saturday morning music class. Now, there is a dude who knows how to hold a tune and is getting better every week. But boy, do I need the practice. Did you hear the quality of my singing in the intro to the last episode of the show? Yowza. I think I need a lot of lessons. Don't you? Well, that's enough for now about lame old me. I'm about to crank up this episode with Cassie Tillett, professional organizer extraordinaire and someone that has more tools than a Swiss Army knife on steroids. We're going to help you manage those sentimental items and teach you the true meaning of working order starting right now. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Smart and Simple Matters Show, everyone. I first started interacting with today's guest this past November. I had just created one of my most popular blog posts, The Ultimate Guide to Professional Organizers, and I was trying to build some awareness of the resource for communities that would benefit from it. So I was reaching out to a number of professional organizing groups, including the Association of Professional Declutterers and Organizers in the United Kingdom, or APDO UK, and I was welcomed with open arms. It was fantastic. Their president, Cassie Tillett, who is our guest today, engaged me in a personal, collaborative, and rewarding way. And ever since then, I've been trying to get her on the show, and today is the day. So here's a little bit about Cassie. She is the president of APDO UK, as I mentioned a moment ago. And if you're in the United States, think of this group as the little sister of the National Association of Professional Organizers. Cassie has been a professional organizer since 1997, and it became her full-time work in 2005 when she and her husband Selwyn, a rector in the Church of England, moved from London about 2 hours northeast to rural Norfolk. Before
Her pursuit of helping people bring order to their physical and mental environment, Cassie was found working as a secretary and office manager and in various other customer service roles. You'll find out for yourself, but she has a variety of interests, but not too many bigger than theater, where you'll find her performing it, directing it, and watching it. So Cassie also enjoys photography, and I was surprised to find out website design. We might talk a little bit more about that. And her primary business hub is workingorder.co.uk, where you can find a ton more about her and some awesome resources. So a very hearty welcome to you, Cassie. I'm glad to have you on today.
Thanks very much, Joel. It's lovely to be with you at last.
Yes, at last. Well, let's start where I normally start, and that is with what I call the seeds of awesomeness. So where you are as an individual, why you do what you do, I've found that the vast majority of people I talk to, that is driven in large part by our youth, by the foundational experiences that we have or something about our environment growing up. And I'd love to hear from you. Could you tell us maybe one to two things about your youth or maybe something specific about the environment that you grew up in that will help us understand why you do what you do?
That's an interesting one. Well, certainly I can remember that my very first job of any description, and by that I don't mean a full-time job, but a Saturday job when I was all in my quite early teens, was working in the local library. And that was something that the systematic nature of it immediately appealed to me. I loved the fact not just putting the books and so forth in the right place, but the fact that having those books in the right place facilitated the service that I was able to offer to the people that use the library. I remember that there was a guy that ran the library, was the kind of fella in charge, who had the most encyclopedic knowledge it's possible to imagine of this very major public library in East London. And you could ask him for any topic and he would be able to direct you straight to it. Now, that in itself was slightly scary, but what I loved about this was the fact that somebody could come to you, ask for a service, and you could deliver it. And the reason it could be delivered so efficiently was that this system had developed and that this particular guy had it so much under his control that he was able to simply hand it out to people like sweets, if you like. It was a gift each time he did it, where they said, where do I find the geography section? Where do I find information on so-and-so? These days, of course, we just type it all in on Google. But, you know, here we're talking 35 years ago, we didn't have that sort of thing. And the fact that you could be sent to those resources so swiftly impressed me no end. And I loved the opportunity to be able to do that for the people that I was working for at the time. So I would imagine that my experiences there in the library gave me those first steps in both customer services and in organisation. And I think the other one was definitely my father. He spent many years of his professional life as a joiner, a carpenter, and a very good one, very good craftsman around the house. And I remember the way that he had his shed at the bottom of the garden organised. It was never one of those places where people say, oh, I know it's the mess, but I can find everything. Oh, no, anybody could have walked into my dad's shed and made sense of where things were. So he could have sent me down there to find a particular hammer or screwdriver or whatever, and it would be in a rational place, not an approximate one. And there was a craftsmanship about that organisation. And it also became more obvious to me a bit later on. My dad went through all sorts of health problems. He is now, he's still with us, but very sadly suffering from crashing senile dementia. So he remembers very little of this. But in those days, all his problems were physical ones, which he coped with in a very sanguine manner. He never let anything get him down. He would simply work with what he had. So when, for example, he could no longer play golf, he went, okay, can't do that. I'll play bowls instead. You don't have to walk so far. You know, he was rational about it. He was very systematic. And the systematic bit of him helped him to work with things in the house. He had both hips replaced at different times. And this, not surprisingly, incapacitated him incapacitated him quite severely over a period of about a year, and he was on crutches and couldn't move very far. So what he did was to simply bring in from the shed and from various other places around the house the things that he used all the time. He applied the principle of anything that you use every single day has got to be within arm's length. So he would have the screwdriver, you know, if he needed to fix something around the house. He would have his pen. He would have his asthma inhaler. He would have any pills that he took regularly. He would have the little gizmo that he used to help him when he was solving crosswords. He would have the newspaper. All the stuff that he wanted at that time was right there without having to go anywhere, because it was physically painful to him to need to go someplace. And that was actually probably my first lesson in how to approach organisation, is obviously the less you use something, the further away it can be. So the Christmas decorations go up in the loft because it doesn't matter that it's a bit of a fight to get to them, because you only use them once a year. And it was this lesson I had from my dad being incapacitated that brought me to this realization that you do not need to be handicapped, which at that time he was, before you employ organization to make your life easier. And I think this was the key to the organization, was the understanding that it's not tidiness for tidiness' sake. It's organization to enable you to do things that you like. And I've always said I would far sooner be spending time with my husband or my friends, or as you've already mentioned, with my camera or on the stage or whatever, rather than wasting hours in looking for paperwork that I can't find. I'd sooner find that piece of paperwork, you know, within 30 seconds and have the rest of the time that I might have spent looking for it doing something that's more enjoyable.
And I just learned something new. We had a shared experience growing up. You were working in a library, and what my first job when I was in college was working as a library assistant. And yeah, I worked for a man who sounded very similar to the guy that you were working for in your youth. He was encyclopedic, as you mentioned. Anything that you needed to know, and computers were just starting to come into the mainstream at that point in time, but it was still amazing. Not just the recall that he had, but the system, the organization that he had, not just within his own brain, but within his workspace, where he could just have instant access, it seemed, to any information or to any resource that you needed. Pretty inspiring thing to be around.
Exactly so.
I want to transition a little bit, because you mentioned your father and the fact that his health state is deteriorating, especially mentally. He doesn't have the kind of control that he used to. And before we get into the meaty topics of our conversation, I'd like to hear your thoughts on, we were describing or going back and forth over email before this conversation, some soap opera style events in your family. And even to add those challenges, I know you've been experiencing your own recent personal challenges with your vision and speech and your foot. It's caused you to temporarily stop doing the things that you love. You mentioned theater and photography. And what you were telling me is this is the kind of thing that opens up the door to invite a level of chaos into your life. But your experience with professional organizing and the tools from the discipline, it seems like it's helping to keep a lid on this ever lurking shadow of disorganization. Can you tell us a little bit about what your struggles are right now and how you are using your experience and your discipline to overcome them?
Absolutely. Basically, the soap opera, which I suppose you might say has been building up one way or another over the last kind of few months, as I've mentioned, my father's senile dementia has made things quite difficult. My parents mercifully moved up here to Norfolk from London about 4 years ago, which does make life considerably easier because they're now 12 miles away instead of 120. So having had them up here, it's made it a lot easier for me to help keep an eye on them. But the situation is a very difficult one because my mother is his sole carer. And although she, at nearly 80, is in remarkably good health, it's a huge amount of stress for her. And also because my father always took care of everything to do with the running of the house in terms of the finances or dealing with the utilities or whatever. And he can no longer do this. So ever since they moved to Norfolk, in fact, I've been doing that for them. So I have power of attorney. I look after all their finances. make sure that the bills are paid, you know, that all the money's in the right place at the right time and so on. And I'm back and forth over there. And because my mother doesn't drive and my father no longer can, I'm their cab driver and so on. So that had already kind of gone into place. Back in, where are we now, March, just a week before Easter, I had a phone call on a Saturday morning. My mother had managed to fall over when she went out to the kitchen in the middle of the night to get some water, didn't switch the light on, and managed to break her arm. And being my mum, she did it properly. She broke it in three places across the wrist and a hairline crack down the arm.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, indeed. So having, bless her, waited until a sensible time of the morning to phone me as she saw it, it had already been broken for sort of 6 hours before we got that far. So I took her to the nearest hospital. They said, actually, Mrs. Nicholson, you've got to have a plate in your arm because you've broken it so badly and you're going to be spending two nights in hospital, which meant I had to move in with my father for those 48 hours because he's now at a stage where he cannot be left on his own. So we got Mum sorted out and I stayed with Dad for 2 days, and then we got Mum back home and we got her some domestic help, which she accepted very unwillingly because it's not the sort of thing one does. You don't admit to needing help, especially if you're British, believe you me. But we got through that, and we got through the 6 weeks of her being in plaster. And having got through that 6 weeks, I just managed to set up with her, just managed to persuade her to accept a different kind of help, as in somebody to come in and sit with my dad just for an afternoon, maybe once a fortnight initially, so I can take my mum out for some respite, because it's a huge strain being with somebody that is either a zombie or gets upset. You know, there is no joy any longer in living with my father, which is very tragic. So I just managed to persuade her into doing this and set it all up. And it was the Wednesday we'd planned our first afternoon out. And the previous Thursday, I'd been going to a rehearsal for a play that I was due to appear in. I'd been at the computer for too long. You know, when this happens, you get really tired and your vision starts to go a bit weird. Well, that's nothing unusual. But my vision had started to get a kind of a blind spot in it. I'd had it happen to me before, but in this particular case, it will go. Got to the rehearsal and found that I was actually having a bit of trouble getting my words out. Now, as you can hear, words are my medium. And I was trying to have a conversation with one of my friends in the cast, and I was really struggling. I thought, there's something wrong here. So on the Monday, I went to see the doctor, and she said, well, it's probably just, as it turned out, what they call an ocular migraine, which is non-sinister and often stress-related and is in itself not a big deal. But she said there is still the tiniest percentage chance that it could have been a TIA. Now, I can't offhand remember what TIA stands for, but effectively it means a mini stroke. So she sent me off to the hospital to get checked out and to find out whether it was actually any kind of a stroke. Every test, I hasten to add, has come back absolutely clear, but they've still banned me from driving for a month.
And you're not walking because you...
And I'm not walking because entirely separately, yeah. I'd seen the doctor on the Monday morning, was due to go to the hospital on the Tuesday morning, or the Tuesday afternoon rather, but on the Monday evening, I went out for a walk around our nice, pretty Norfolk country lanes, stopped to take a photograph, stepped back onto the road, didn't see a pothole, foot went over and I decked myself big time, stood up, couldn't actually walk instantly. It wasn't one of these things that you suddenly realise half an hour later it hurts. This hurt big time. Flagged down a passing motorist who took me home. So this was actually the day before I was due to be seeing the guys at the hospital about this suspected TIA.
But we're building this picture. I mean, we're not mentioning this all to impress people at the misfortune that you or other people
absolutely.
In your life have suffered. We're painting this picture that not just in the past few months, but this has been building for a while now. And as you said to me, that when there's a disaster, whether it's with you or with your family, people you care about, people you love, whomever it is, when there's a disaster or an emergency, you need to have some kind of capacity in your life for dealing with it. You need to have some level of organization so that you already know where all the insurance documents are, where all of the paperwork is. You need to feel that level of, I don't know what the best way to say this is, but probably stability in your life, which you can achieve through a number of the ways that you help your other clients, which is organizing not just their physical environment, but also their digital environment and their mental state at points when it's appropriate. So how with all of these things going on, with this one thing after another, after another, after another, how have you been able to deal with this based on the fact that you help other people with this for a profession?
Absolutely. Well, the very first thing comes up in the context of me having got a lift from a passing motorist back to my house. I then had to summon help. And I thought, well, okay, I could just phone an ambulance, but it's going to be an awful lot easier if I can get hold of a neighbour who could take me to casualty. In my iPhone, I have not just programmed in numbers, but because for quite some considerable time I've had a process in place of having all names, addresses, phone numbers of absolutely everybody, by which I mean my friends, my family, my business acquaintances, my neighbours, the lot. I use Google Mail to store all of those pieces of data. And my phone numbers in my iPhone synchronize with my Google Mail account. There's something in the region of 900 to 1,000 contacts in there from all over my life. But it means that that is my central repository of information. So even when I was virtually crying with pain sitting on the sofa, all I had to think of was, okay, how do I find who is in the village so that I can phone them and whose number I have? So I simply typed in the search bit of the phone, Western Longville, which is the name of my village, which of course pulled up anybody who was living in the village. That brought me four people nearby. Tried the first one on answer phone, second and third on answer phone, and I was just starting to panic. Got to number four, phoned Ruth, who lives about half a mile out of the village. Hallelujah, she was in. Bless her heart, she dropped what she was doing, came out to the rectory. I'd left the latch on the door mercifully when I came in so that it was open. She came in, checked I was okay, left a note for my husband, took me to casualty. Now, the point is that if I just program numbers into my phone as I thought I might need them, most of my neighbours, I wouldn't actually need those numbers. They might have been written down in an address book, which, of course, if that had been upstairs, I couldn't have physically got to. I wouldn't have been able to call any of those guys because I wouldn't have had their numbers. So that actually was the first thing in this whole daft episode, which I thought, actually, it's just as well I'm organized about this, because otherwise I wouldn't have had so many phone numbers to choose from.
Oh, it's interesting that you say that, because I've found that a tool or a system is only as good as your ability to access it. So if I'm out and about and everything is spotless and perfect in my home, and it's exactly organized and systematized the way that I want, well, that doesn't really do me very much good if I'm not in my home. If I can't take my system, if I can't take the level of organization with me, whether it's through phone, and I use Google Contacts too, and I have a lot of additional information about people that I might never need. But you're talking about doing a search and looking for people in a specific town. So when the time comes, you can just do a search and find, I have four people, I can call them. Or breaking people into categories where some people might be labeled as international or based on their religion or their politics or their sports affiliation or whatever that is. Being able to have that level of information organized in a way that makes sense and that can be accessed outside of your ideal environment, outside of your home turf, is a really powerful thing. You know, it's interesting. We've been talking so far about technology, digital photography and smartphones and cloud storage and all these things. And one of the reasons why I'm so fascinated about professional organizing and professional organizers is it seems to draw in people like you with this diverse set of skills and tools and mindset. You know, case in point, I was on your website and you say, and I quote, whether you'd like help in your business or in your home, with paper or with technology, with clothing or with furniture, with your mobile phone or your utility room. I can help you find solutions and to relax and enjoy your life. And the reason why I find it so fascinating is a lot of people who think of organizing or who think of professional organizers, if they even know anything about the industry, think of your physical environment. But you go way beyond the physical environment to a whole host of skill building, time management, digital techniques that you can use in order to make more sense of your world. Why do you feel that it's so important for you to be able to do so many of these things for your clients?
I had it described to me once by a chap I was on a course with as your backpack. The thing is that in life as a whole, and I think this is what an awful lot of professional organizers do, we all bring a huge amount of life experiences. And whilst some of them are reasonably obvious, you know, I mean, you would expect a professional organizer to have a pretty good grip on a good filing system, for example. But some of them are less obvious. And it's when you're able to bring experiences from something that has actually happened to you in your life, like, for example, the business of my father breaking both hips and then, you know, teaching me through that about the having the stuff closest to you that you use the most often. That isn't necessarily professional organizer. That is a trick, a tip, a useful idea that you've picked up along the way. And I find that because my life overall is a very full one, it's very varied. Things like the theatre, for example, things like ability to do bookkeeping, running my own books, that sort of thing, in the running of my business. Running my own parents' books because they can no longer do it for themselves, doing stuff that helps my husband in the context of his church work, design work, knowing how to lay out a document or a poster, that sort of thing. Having taught myself at a very young age how to use a word processor, and this is probably way before you when I was first using computers, we had WordPerfect 5.1 for DOS. Does anybody remember that?
Remember that. I am actually old enough to remember that. Yes.
I love WordPerfect. It was a fabulous system. But the point is, these are all experiences that I've picked up along the way. And then if I find myself with a client, they come up with a situation that is defeating them, that they can't find an obvious way around. I find that I've got these tools in my backpack. It's not a case of saying, here is an out-of-the-box solution, because in fact, it very seldom is. It's far more, when I was faced up with this situation, this is the way that after trial and error, I found was the way of approaching it. And therefore, they can apply it in a similar way to their own situation. So, for instance, I mean, I do a lot of storytelling in my work. I will often find myself with a client using an illustration, a painting, if you like, of something that's happened to me or maybe to another client. And there was a lady that I was working with just recently. Now, what was that wonderful one that she came out with? It was her, that was it. It was just gathering together her contacts, for example. Now, in her case, she is really not a geek. She is so not a techie. She can't cope with much on the computer at all. It does her no good at all. But when she was starting to look at gathering her contacts together, there was no way she was going to start putting them all on Google. Well, that wasn't going to work for her. But at the very least, we got her a file. You know, one of those magazine files, and we just put in there all the bits of paperwork that we could find. There were a few business cards, and there was an old address book, and there was a new address book, and there were scraps of paper and so on. And she said, at some point, I'm going to go through and really sort those out. But in the meantime, it doesn't actually matter, because at least I know that in one little box, I've now got all my contacts. So what she did was to take my very much more extreme experience, my Google Mail one. But she said, yeah, but I can see the same principle, even though I'm not doing it as beautifully as you are yet. That doesn't actually matter. I'm taking what you've done and applying it in a slightly different way. And that's what I find time over time with clients, is that we'll run through possible scenarios. I'll explain something that's happened to me and they'll go, well, yeah, but why didn't I think of such and such?
One of the reasons why I was really excited to talk to you is some of the things that are important to you aren't very close. You talked about putting things up in the loft, or some people might have a box of their old sentimental stuff in the basement. Maybe they haven't even looked at it in 5 years or in 10 years, but that precious thing from high school, or the first love letter that they wrote to their boyfriend or girlfriend, these types of things which they have this emotional tie to and is very hard to break. I know that one of probably the best things that some professional organizers can do for people is help them with that sentimental stuff. How do I detach myself from it, but how do I determine whether I should keep it around, or how much of it I should keep around?
Yeah, I think there are two very important things here, because a couple of the things you just said, it's somebody saying that I want to get rid of this, but I can't or I mustn't, is very different from valuing a piece of your sentimental past. There's absolutely nothing wrong, as you know, with keeping something that you may not, as you say, look at for years. If the memories that it gives you, if the feeling it gives you is good, then, and it's not eating anything, and you know where it is, and you can enjoy it when you want it, that's absolutely fine. The difficulty arises where people think that they should keep something because of the history that's attached to it, or it belonged to my grandmother, or whatever it happens to be, but they don't actually like it or want it themselves. And that particular sentiment that is being brought up anytime they see this item is not joyful. So the first thing is to try to discern whether it's simply, should I get rid of it just because it isn't useful? Well, you probably know the wonderful William Morris thing that virtually every professional organizer has on their website.
Please tell
have
us.
Have nothing in your home that you do not know to be be useful or believe to be beautiful. And those are two very important distinctions. Knowing something to be useful, like the insurance documents I was talking about, for example, they're useful. You would lose something from not having them. Your birth certificate, your marriage certificate, whatever. Something that would cause you major, major inconvenience by losing it. That's one side. But if you believe something to be beautiful, whether it's visually beautiful or audibly, like a recording of something, or because of the feeling that it gives you, that's another very vital part of it. And I've had a lot of clients that have said to me, oh, you're not forcing me to throw things away just because they're sentimentalists. No, they're part of what you are, or part of what you were. They form part of your life. You don't have to be getting rid of things just because they're not useful in the utilitarian sense. The things that cause the problems are when people keep things that are neither useful nor beautiful. They're not performing a useful function that helps you in your daily life now, nor are they giving you the pleasant feelings from, as you said, the first letter that you wrote to or received from your partner, for example. Now, I've got a little box file which has an assortment of exceptionally sentimental stuff that's come from my lovely husband, who I've been married to for 18 years. And if I want a sentiment fest, I want to be able to find them. I don't want to have to burrow around to find them. If I'm feeling really gooey and I want to go through some old letters, I need to be able to find them. So you don't want them to be buried someplace. If I want to find old photographs or whatever, it doesn't help if you have to dig. If they're in the albums or on the computer or whatever, you go to them and you enjoy them. You don't get stressed out in the process of finding them. And the other thing that I often say to clients, if they pick up an item and go, I can't decide whether to get rid of this or not, and I will usually say, if you lost it by mistake, Would you care? Would you give a monkey's, to use a British phrase? There've been, as we all know, an awful lot of fairly ghastly natural disasters in recent years. There's been floods, tsunamis, appalling things where people have lost every physical possession that they own and they had no choice in the matter. We had some pretty appalling floods in this country a couple of years ago. And I was so struck by a comment from somebody being interviewed about what they'd lost. And it soon became evident that the things that they'd lost fell into three very specific categories. You had the things that they would give anything to get back again. And those were usually not the useful, but the beautiful. They would be the sentimental. They might be diaries or letters or jewelry or whatever, the irreplaceable things. Mm-hmm. Then you had, secondly, the things that were inconvenient, but not in themselves attachments. Now, under that, you might have, for example, my camera, which was broken when I fell over. It was covered under the insurance. It was annoying. It was irritating. It was inconvenient. But for pity's sakes, it was only a camera. It's been replaced under the insurance. I've got a new one. It's fine. And in the same way, in the floods or the hurricane or whatever it happens to be, if these things are covered by insurance or whatever, you finish up by getting those things back. You get your TV back, your computer back, your stereo back, whatever it happens to be. But the things themselves, it's no more than an inconvenience to be dealing with them. But thirdly, and most importantly, there were things that people had lost that they finally could admit they were so glad to see the back of because the decision had been taken out of their hands. Mm-hmm. They no longer had to decide what to do about that picture that they'd inherited from their great aunt and always hated and never put up anywhere. So it was just gathering dust in some under the bed or propped up in a pile somewhere. They don't want it. They didn't want to put it up, but they were made to feel guilty because it had been given to them by X person. And therefore, decision had been taken out of their hands. They could let it go. And the point is, none of us needs to go through a cyclone, a tsunami, a flood before we deal with the things that it's hurting us to keep and which are taking up the room that could be taken by the things that give us pleasure, either by being useful or beautiful. And when I challenge people to approach it from that perspective and say, okay, don't think, should I get rid of it? Think, what would happen if I lost it by mistake? They suddenly find it a whole lot easier to make that decision and to put themselves mentally into that place.
So let's shift gears for a moment, or rather maybe focus even on some of the themes that you just mentioned right there. It's one thing to have the choice made for you, to have a flood or a volcano erupt or an earthquake, whatever kind of natural disaster that you can't prevent from happening, take away that which you want, or you say, oh, thank goodness that that is no longer in my life. I feel a sense of relief. But it's another thing to go willingly into trying to proactively remove the things that are holding you back and lead a more intentional life, pursuing the things that you want to bring you health and happiness. And I know you've got some really cool online and offline resources for people who want to be proactive in their organization and in their environment. One of them was Digital Unite, which I was instantly drawn to. Their tagline, unleash your digital talents, overlaps nicely with the tagline that I have at Value of Simple, of liberate your time, money, and talent. And you were talking about Freegal and Green Metropolis. Are there some really cool resources that you feel are relevant to a broad audience that people can go out and start researching and proactively apply to their lives in order to make more sense of their world or to bring less stress, feel less overwhelmed?
I think when it comes to those sorts of resources that you're talking about, like Freegal, for example, I think FreeCycle is going to be the equivalent in the States. FreeCycle is one of these places where it's basically, if you don't already know it, it's like eBay but with no money. You advertise that you've got something or that you want something, and people respond to those advertisements. And the biggest problem I find that people have with getting rid of stuff is that even if they don't actually want it themselves, if they think it's just going into landfill, it reduces the value for them of what it represented to them in the first place. So it sort of represents a failure in them for having bought it to start with. Whereas if they know it's going to a good home, they find it an awful lot easier to dispose of. Well, obviously, charity shops. Hang on, you call them something different, don't you?
Well, no, that's about the same thing.
Oh, you call them charity shops. There is another.
Whether it's Goodwill, a place like that.
Goodwill, that's the phrase, yeah. The Goodwill shops. If they know that it's going to go to another good cause, it's a whole load easier to get rid of. The Freegal FreeCycle type thing is exactly that. So, for instance, I spotted an advert from a young man who was a student who had very little money and who was in desperate need of a scanner. I had a scanner, because my husband had changed from one printer to another, and his new printer had a scanner in it, so the old separate scanner was made redundant, and I hadn't got round to doing anything with it, and it had kind of, and yes, even professional organisers do have clutter as well, and
we all do,
and it was just kind of there, sitting in the kind of under-eave storage space that I have, and I saw this advert and thought, well, I'm not going to sell it. He may as well have it. And he was absolutely thrilled to bits. And otherwise, it was just going to sit in my attic doing absolutely nothing. So things like that, where you can focus on not only what it's going to be doing for you in terms of letting go, giving you the space, getting it off your conscience, but at the same time doing something very positive and proactive for somebody else that might need it, it's a win-win situation.
Yeah, it's interesting. So you're leveraging your past purchases or experiences for the future benefit or for the future gain of someone else. And
exactly.
These are the ways that I'm always thinking of my life is, what have I done in the past that is useful to me or to someone else in the future? And that's why I'm such a big fan of this concept I call experience curating. And I'm curious to know what your views are. For the regular listeners of the show, they've heard me talk about curating and ask people about how they practice it in their life. For the uninitiated, I'm talking about filtering all of your experiences with intention and then creating some kind of archive. It could be a spreadsheet. It could be technology like Evernote or Pinterest. It could be a journal. It could be Post-it notes. And then organizing them in a way like with categories or subcategories. And you're talking about the context, you know, the swatches that you have there. There's a certain context to them, and it's not relevant to everybody. But when you share it, when you find the appropriate audience or the appropriate person to share with, it can be incredibly meaningful for them. You can feel good, but you can also be a go-to resource. You can be a community member for people who need what you have, what experiences you've had. Do you practice this concept of curating your existence in any way?
Oh, absolutely. The most obvious ones at the beginning of this are the things that we've spoken of already that I do professionally. So people know that A, I'm a professional organizer, B, I'm a geek. So I have a lot of my friends on Facebook, for example, who know because I tell them off if they pass on one of these mad hoaxes, for example. They always get told off by me. They've stopped doing that. They're far more likely to message me and say, Cassie, is this for real? So that's, you know, that's something that I'm known for.
That's cool. You become their filter.
Exactly. I have become their filter. And if it saves them from passing on yet another rubbishy hoax or another virus, heaven help us, or whatever, I would sooner do that. And they do come to me. It's a level of expertise that I have that I'm absolutely delighted to share. Another one that I've done in the past, not so much now, but as an archive, it still very much exists. I've done an awful lot of work on family history, genealogy. I researched to a greater or lesser extent, all four of my grandparents' names. And I have a lot of information on all of them. So I have little websites that I've designed, which simply give very basic information about this. explain where my interests are, which, you know, where these guys came from geographically, and say, if you think you might be connected with these guys, please let me know, because it may well be that I can save you inventing the wheel, because I already have this tree, this birth certificate, this marriage certificate, whatever. I've been able to provide people with photographs of their great-great-grandparents because they've been provided to me by somebody else further along the same tree, mm-hmm. you know? And that has been an absolute joy. There was a guy I did some work with several years ago now. He's living in Canada now, but he's British originally. And he knew his father's, his natural father's surname, although he'd never been married to his mother. And I managed to sort out the entire story and put him in touch with both first and second cousins, and to give him the first photograph of his natural father that he'd seen for nearly 50 years. Now, that was off the scale in terms of satisfaction. But it was because I had been, as you put it, a curator of the photographs and the information that I'd found.
Well, there we go. Yet another use for curating beyond spreadsheets, beyond recipes and restaurants and books and movies and online content. Genealogy.
Absolutely.
Applying your curating hat. That's really cool. Well, this has been wonderful in a number of different ways. And I'd like for you to have the opportunity to ask yourself a question. And basically, I'm going to frame it to you, but you can take it wherever you want. Is there anything that we didn't talk about that you would like people to know?
There's a very big question, isn't there? I think one of the things that I do get asked quite frequently by clients is, are you really organized yourself? Is your house perfect? Well, the answer to the second question is most definitely no. I mean, admittedly, it's a bit worse at the moment because I'm hobbling around on a stick because of my foot, but that's neither here nor there. But it isn't perfect. It isn't minimalist, but it is working. And it's very important to me that all my clients bring their lives to a state of, well, that's what my business is called, working order. It is what is working order for them. I have had clients who have got to a stage where other clients have started. In other words, it's where that comfort level is for people. It's where I've got them to a point where they can operate their lives with less stress, with less worry, with more efficiency. The superficial nature of being beautiful and precise and in alphabetical order and all the rest of it, if that's what floats your boat, then that's absolutely fine. But it's making it work for you. It's making your life work for you. It's making, as we said back at the beginning, when you've had a soap opera like I have, having those absolute nuts and bolts in place. We all know that life throws you an awful lot of curveballs. Free, you know, and this last few, yeah, okay, it's been excelling itself as far as I'm concerned. But life will do that. Therefore, the more of those really boring, tedious things you've got under control to begin with before the curveball arrives, the more likely you are to get through it with your sense of humor intact. And therefore, the idea of being absolutely perfect, it's actually unattainable anyway, and it can put some people off from attempting to get their lives to what is workable for them, what is reasonable, what is sensible, what is comfortable. It's a personality thing. I worked with a lad a couple of years ago, absolutely delightful man, who suffers from ADD, attention deficit disorder. And to him, just to get things in big building blocks of workable was the biggest revelation ever. He is never in a million years going to live in a minimalist home. It's simply not built into him. It's not going to happen. But he and his wife are so much happier now that they have the big building blocks in place, and they know that it doesn't matter if they don't get it perfect. So I will always emphasize the need for workability way above the need for perfection, or what one of my colleagues actually once rather nicely termed micro-organizing, And that's when you get into organizing for the sake of being organized rather than the sake of what it can do for your life. And that's the biggest difference.
I like the approach. It's about doing things that are functional, that resonate with who you are and how you want to experience life. And the things that make sure that you don't feel overwhelmed and stressed. If your environment, physical, digital, mental, emotional, spiritual, or whatever, doesn't look like someone else's vision of what the ideal state is for a human being who lives in a certain part of the country or the world or who has this kind of a job, who cares? If you find something that works great for you and is resilient, that can see you through in good times and bad, that's the kind of system, that's the kind of organization you need. And it's and it's fun to hear that approach to it. It's something that I practice. And it looks different for me than it does for everybody else, but that's fine. You find what works for you, and then you stay with it. And fortunately, there's people like you who help people who can't figure out what's working for them get something in place to do it themselves. Well, everything that we've talked about, working order, your website, I'm going to link to that in the show notes, along with some of the other resources that we've talked about. Where else can we find you online?
Working Order is also on Facebook and Twitter. Twitter, I kind of jump in and out of a bit, I have to say. And the other place, of course, is on the APDO UK, APDO UK website that you already mentioned. There's a little over 100 of us in the United Kingdom, which for a small country isn't bad. And you'll find me on there together with the rest of my colleagues dotted around all over the United Kingdom, all of us with different specialisms, different abilities, this kind of thing. And of course, if one is in the United Kingdom and if one is in Norwich, in the middle of Norfolk, you're as likely to find me on stage.
Uh-huh. Well, at least you can still watch theater, even if you can't be in theater or direct it. So you've got that going for you until that foot heals, and I hope it does very soon.
I do indeed.
Well, thank you very much for being on the show today, Cassie. I really appreciate it.
It's a real pleasure, and thank you very much indeed for having me.
Hey friend, it's just me again. Did you enjoy what Cassie had to say? If so, let her know on Twitter at Working Order or check out her website at workingorder.co.uk. She deserves to hear from some folks after sharing that level of grooviness with us all. If you want to share any grooviness with me, suggestions for future guests, or feedback on what you do and do not dig about Smart and Simple Matters, catch me on Twitter at Joel Zaslavsky or via email, which is joel@valueofsimple.com. Throw something random in the subject line. Make it huge, make it tiny, doesn't matter. I just would love to hear from you. You can find other ways to connect with me and all the resources that were discussed in this episode by going to the show notes at valueofsimple.com/SASM032. And as a quick side note, I'd like to say thanks to a new friend of mine for mentioning me in his recent podcast episode. His name is Jared Easley, and his show is called Starve the Doubts. I've recently started listening to Starve the Doubts, a show in the growing genre of interviewing successful entrepreneurs. The unique format and questions combined with Jared's personality make it a winner in my book, and you may want to check it out too at starvethedoubts.com. On a completely unrelated note, I am ramping up public speaking soon, and I'd love to hear from you if you think I'd be a good fit to talk to people who need to hear what I have to say about simplifying, organizing, being money wise, curating spreadsheets, and living a rich, meaningful life. You can find details about booking me to speak at your event at valueofsimple.com/speaking. And thanks a combined boatload, crap load, and heap load, that's a lot of loads, for listening to another edition of SASM, my friend. I won't bother you with a reminder and details about iTunes reviews, the Refuge of Simplicity, or anything else today, because I just want you to focus on squeezing the most out of the rest of your day. Now, pardon me as I try to squeeze a nap in somewhere, because this little Clark fella is testing just how much I can retain my sanity on minimal sleep. You know that I love minimalism, but I don't care for minimal sleep. Know what I mean, Vern? It's time for your partner in simplifying to sign off again. You've just listened to the Smart and Simple Matters podcast with Joel Zaslavsky. creator of all things Value of Simple.